Nach dem Wunder wissen wir nicht. Nicht gut.
Good morning, Commissioner. This morning's presentation will be on behalf of various students of the what we're terming the Park Street Special Character Area, those listed on the front page of my recognition, as well as the friends of the Washington Garden and the Youth Group. Now, this presentation is the fifth time I'm in front of this channel for this section of the group, and hopefully the final presentation this morning. So what I've done is hopefully the assistance of those commissioners who did not sit on those earlier presentations. I've attended to the legal commission, the earlier submissions presented in the strategic direction chapters, the heritage chapters, and the residential chapter topic 6. Now, I hope that upon reading those earlier submissions, it might give a bit of a flavour and background about what this case is about and what this group seeks to achieve in the special character area. And in particular, I just bring to your attention that the presentation made in topic 6 with respect to the medium density residential chapter was, I guess, a bit of a backstop option. So seeking amendments specific to the chapter 8 NDR chapter in the instance that a particular specific zone or overlay was not achieved. Now, this topic 13 is obviously about the latter, and what I have hoped to provide in these submissions is an effective and efficient option for providing a special character overlay for this rezoning. So I understand that commissioners have had the opportunity to read these legal submissions, and I won't take you through them word for word, but I will just take you to a couple of key points I wish to emphasise, and then we can proceed to any questions and a presentation of Dr. Farmer's and Mr. Castle's evidence. In my executive summary, I have reiterated what are the core characteristics of residential immunity and special character for this special character overlay. Now, perhaps the easiest way to point to the area we're talking about, I'm sure you're familiar and perhaps you've even undertaken a site visit, is page 1 of Dr. Farmer's appraisal, which identifies the two blocks that we're talking about. Perhaps that's an assistance to show the Commission first that these two blocks here adjacent to the Queenstown Gardens and bounded by Park Street and Hobart Street, as I identified Wilson Street. Now, my executive summary largely calls on the conclusions made in Dr. Farmer's appraisal that the special character area holds a distinctive residential immunity that generates a strong sense of place for many of the residents who live here and call Queenstown their home. And part of its key distinctiveness and charm, in Dr. Farmer's words, is that it is not wholly or obviously homogenous. And I think that's quite interesting when you walk around the two blocks and you're trying to deduce what the special character is, that it's not actually about finding a homogeneity of built form or setback or types of development, but it's actually the almost bespoke nature of that development which contributes to its own distinctiveness. Now, I've also said in my executive summary that quality urban design, built form and amenity are relevant factors to be provided for within parts of the Act and are also recognised in the higher order and strategic provisions of the proposed plan. I think the special character overlay should not just be viewed as an economic inhibitor by way of less yield being able to be realised, but that also economic considerations are broader than that and include potential economic benefits of creating a cultural overlay or node close to the town centre and gardens, which are frequented by international and domestic visitors. Now, Mr. Hackles will also talk to this point a little bit more in his summary shortly. In these submissions, what I've done is I've appended a revised version of Chapter 8, the NDR chapter in Appendix 2, and a supporting definition to assist the consideration and application of those revised provisions. Now, the intent of both of those is that they will provide certainty and assist the consideration of appropriateness of future subdivision and development against those special character area qualities so defined. And I consider that those provisions drafted fit within the PDP framework and better achieve the purpose of the higher order provisions of the PDP and parts of the Act. Now, going to an overview of that relief and the scope associated with it, what I've done in my chapter, in my paragraph 14, is to attempt to briefly summarise in one place all the amendments that I've made to Chapter 8 to recognise the special character area, so that to ensure that future subdivision development complements and responds sensitively to that special character, and to ensure that it's of a form and design which maintains that character. So to do that, a specific objective has been added in under the Arrowtown specific objective, and under that a specific policy suite which considers urban design, scale, material, built form and use. Now that policy and objective suite added in are then given support by additional site-specific standards relating to special character quality and amenity. And the intent of amending those standards has been to replicate what was in the operative plan zoning of the high density residential subzone C. So that has been the intent, to pull across that status quo, and I would welcome any thoughts or suggestions on perhaps anything which might have been overlooked or could otherwise be more efficiently drafted. So in summary there, in subparagraph D, I've listed out the standards which have been pulled across, being related to maximum building coverage site standards, or non-compliant standards, the activity status for non-compliant and maximum site density, retention of the boundary setback and concession plan requirements, retention of minimum site landscaping requirements, maximum building length, fencing restrictions, and retention of the minimum allotment size in the subdivision chapter. Also, you'll see there that in those standards tables, I've added in additional matters of discretion for consideration of the special character area. And the hope is that those matters of discretion, which refer to the Park Street special character area or the area of special character, are then informed by the definition which is proposed in Appendix 3. So together, the intent is that the definition works as sort of a design statement or a character statement which informs those site-specific standards. And what I've said there is in paragraph 15 is that that definition provides a character area statement and description of the area, as well as setting out a summary of the key values which contribute to that special character. The proposed definition states that an assessment of proposals for the development and modification of buildings will be considered against that definition, and references in the PDP to the area's special character have a corresponding meaning to the definition. Now, I have had to admit, yes, a bit of plagiarism here. I've taken that model of having a bespoke overlay and that's supported by a character statement or definition from some of the unitary plan character areas and their supporting character statements. So the intent is that specific matters of discretion and associated objectives and policies with reference to special character are assessed against that definition. And I think that that also reflects in this PDP, the framework which is used for the Area Plan Design Guidelines and associated PDP provisions. However, for this Park Street Special Character Area, the proposed definition is what is here, a simpler version than using separate guidelines or incorporated by reference. Now, in paragraph 17, I alluded to the fact there that I appreciate the definition that I proposed would appear quite extensive next to some of these other definitions within Chapter 2 of this PDP, and so this bit would be open to other mechanisms to achieve the intent of that, such as perhaps that design statement being pulled into Chapter 8 itself, or perhaps it sitting as an advisory note. I think there could be other options. Now, just for the purposes of clarity, I don't think this is a contentious issue, but in paragraph 18 and 19, I've briefly touched upon scope, and I don't think that it's an issue in this case. The submitter's original submission was very broad, seeking a range of relief from retention of the ODP status quo through to recognising a special character overlay or a special zone which reflects character or amenity. So I think what we have put together here in this package to provide an overlay of special character and associated amendments to Chapter 8 fits well in that original submission. Now, the next section of my submission turns to briefly summarise the submitter's evidence. And as you're aware, evidence has been pre-lodged on behalf of Dr. Farmer, who has considered specific character, special character evidence, which in her opinion is exhibited within this area, and that's also supported by evidence from the residents presented on behalf of Mr. Castle and rebuttal evidence from Ms. Bulling. Now, as we discussed in one of my earlier appearances, Ms. Bulling is not appearing today, but should any questions come up, those can be relayed to Ms. Bulling. Now, Mr. Castle's evidence provides a summary of some particularly unique characteristics of the area, including classic protected heritage features, being those listed as heritage items, but also the relationship of these blocks to the town centre, the lake, pedestrian access points, trees and amenity planting, and the residential nature of the area. And perhaps most importantly, a reflection on previous examples of character or heritage protection within the wider Queenstown district, which were, in Mr. Castle's opinion, similar to this rezoning proposal, perhaps not initially met with entire approval or understanding, but nonetheless subsequently have resulted in a real benefit to the community and the district from that protection. Now, I submit that each of these resident views are shared by other joint submitters in this area, mainly those listed on the front cover page of these submissions, and that those views are representative of people who have cared for and looked after this area in the hope that it would continue to be an important remnant area of historical Queenstown residential use, not only for residents and visitors, but also, future coming generations who will appreciate the recognition of that special character. The idea of creating a cultural overlay or node stems from interest also in international practices to provide residents and visitors with an opportunity to see a living community which has stories to tell and exhibits an amenity within which people wish to engage. And I submit that those are also potential economic benefits of this proposal. Now, with respect to that international practice and interest, Mr. Castle is going to take you through soon in a little bit more detail about what that means and how that's evolved. In paragraph 21, I have summarised key conclusions from Dr. Farmer's evidence on special character. And I don't think I need to read through all of that, save to say that overall it's considered that the zone is of a unique character, being evocative of the various phases of residential development of the original central Queenstown settlement, being contiguous with the Queenstown Gardens and the Queenstown Bay, and deriving much of its character as a location of special value for the CBD and wider district. Now, some of the special character elements which Dr. Palmer has focused in on are the enclosed streetscape of the area being clearly demarcated by its boundaries of the lake, the gardens, the topography of the area, and that providing itself a two-block buffer from adjacent noise and activity of high-density zones to the north and east. Also there is residential character, so Dr. Butler has summarised that as being the combination of low-scale residential development over some decades, resulting in an individual sense of place and reflecting 140 years of Queenstown development. And thirdly there, the greening and enclosure of the area, being evidenced by extensive greening and natural spaces in the area, providing for an intermediate zone of character and housing and gardens, and also contributing to the Waxwood Gardens or Queenstown Gardens' broader and extended landscape values. Now, I don't think I'll go there into any more detail about Dr. Farman's conclusions. She can talk you through those herself, and questions can be directed in respect of that to yourself. So, having summarised the submitter's case, I just want to briefly touch on some aspects which I found interesting in the council's case. I don't want to, I guess, think they're talking or dwelling on this too much, but I guess one of the key parts of the filtration which stood out to me was the consideration that downzoning of this site would result in economic disbenefits, which would not outweigh any likely benefits. So just pulling on that idea of economic disbenefits, I guess there's a couple of points. Firstly, that we've heard in the course of this hearing stream and in fact in the COVID-12 hearing stream, although not as relevant, I appreciate that the dwelling capacity evidence of the council has shown that they have sufficient zone capacity in the short, medium and long term for residential development. And so in my submission, there has not been a demonstrated need for additional density in this area of special character. And that being an area which cannot otherwise be replicated or replaced elsewhere in the district. And I'm not sure as well that this should be referred to as a down zoning, but rather a retention of the Oxford plan status quo. Although I guess, again, when you're looking at a down zoning, perhaps if you're looking at it being medium density, as in the PDP, one might consider a special character area down zoning from that. Nonetheless, I also think that reflection on there being economic disbenefits doesn't actually quantify the loss that could result from not recognising special character and amenity. And even though the 42A report rightly touches on recognising that existence in accordance with Section 5 and Section 7 of the Act, and conversely there, and again, this is something which Mr. Campbell's will draw on a little bit more in his summary soon, is that there are potential economic benefits of creating the overlay which will accrue from protecting and preserving special character, and particularly when one considers the area as being the interface of a critical tourism attraction, namely the Queenstown Gardens in the town centre. And if visitors to this district wish to see a living community and protective amenity and character, they may wish to also engage in that when they come here and contribute, and that will contribute to their overall visitor experience. In paragraphs 27 and 28 there, I just briefly touched upon the fact that the rebuttal tank visit, this very topic, refers back to the council's heritage expertise presented in Topic 03. Now, I went back and had another look at that, and I actually couldn't find Dr. Knott's conclusion that there wasn't a cohesive character for the site, but perhaps if I'd missed something, I would be enlightened to be pointed in the right direction. But nonetheless, I think the point is that the submitted case here, and as evidenced in Dr. Farman's evidence, is it's not actually just about classic heritage or historic heritage per se, being a Section 6 matter. It is something broader than that, and I hope that the commissioners, upon reading Dr. Farman's evidence and her appraisal, might appreciate the flavour or the broader aspect of what that character involved, and perhaps some questioning on that, so it will help to use that up further. So I've concluded there in my submissions with reference to the provisions that I've amended and included in these submissions, which I consider are an effective and efficient way to achieve higher order provisions of the PDP, which are not just about increasing density in areas close to town centres, but are also about creating quality urban design, built form, and you know, good outcomes for this district as a whole. And I guess I just wish to make one final part of statement, and that's been reiterated in a few cases throughout my submissions, is that once you've lost heritage or special character, it can be lost forever, and it can't necessarily be replicated or replaced. So that concludes a quick summary of my submission. And as I've said, I welcome any thoughts on the specific amendments which I've suggested to achieve this outcome. I think there are perhaps a number of ways which this could be achieved, but what I've tried to do here is put forward a method which I think is an efficient mechanism and which fits with the PDP framework than a simple overlay, site standard specific provisions, and those being supported by a definition of character. So if there are any questions on that framework or on the content of my submission, I'm happy to answer those now or go through those with the Commission, or otherwise we can proceed to hearing the summaries of the experts.
I have lots of questions. I'm wondering, Chair, if we should hear from the witnesses and then put the questions. Some of them were about planning matters, some of them were about character. Just a bit of a mix.
Okay, that's actually going to be a good approach, Commissioner. So if I might introduce Dr. Farman first, and she can read a summary, which I'll make up.
Constructed from the 1870s onwards and includes a small number of listed historic drapes, historic weddings, and slightly larger room spaces. Historic pattern and sections within the area, which is still discernible unlike some other parts of Queenstown, is demarcated by the lines of Park and Hobart Streets. The western side is sheltered by the substantial tree screen of Queenstown Gardens. The southern group of sections slope towards the lake, and this combination of natural and geographic features provides a sense of enclosure to the Park Street area that is a distinctive feature of its character and sense of place. The houses are generally set back from pavement and feature front gardens and screenings that contribute to the sense of privacy and intimacy generated by the lower story heights and smaller matting found across the Park Street area. The location and residential character of the Park Street area offers an important buffer zone for the highly valued Queensland Gardens through providing an intermediate zone of character housing and gardens that contributes to and mutually enhances the garden's broader amenity and landscape values for both residents and visitors to Queenstown. The significant character elements are considered to be the area's physical and visual qualities of its remaining built fabric and formers, which exemplify an older, domestic scale, residential area of Queenstown, embodying a mixture of building materials, including historic stone, timber and corrugated iron, juxtaposed with more modern timber, wood and block. These are interspersed with attractive greening provided by mature gardens, trees and other plantings of the area. Other character elements are the scale of developments across the area, which is typically of low density development, and buildings are generally single or two-storied with generous irregular setbacks and road frontages. Dwellings are predominantly self-contained residential units, and there is very limited visitor accommodation and commercial activity. Finally, the character of the streetscape is determined by the human scale residential built forms found in the area and their relationship to the roads, gardens and fencing, as well as the layout and design of the street itself. Predominantly, front yards are separated from the street with mostly low fences, hedges, walls or planting. The area provides a buffer from the noise and activity of medium density development further to the north and east, whilst the attractive and mutual interface along Park Street, between the edge of the area and the Queenstown Gardens, provides particular amenity for residents and visitors alike. Overall, the small residential area enclosed by Park Street and Taylor Street and the lake is one of the last surviving parts of Queenstown where the residential development and pre-commercialised heritage character of the town remains tangible to its residents and visitors alike. As such, it provides a level of amenity and cultural value through its production of a unique sense of place for the Park Street special character area and its residents. Together, these different elements combine to produce a highly distinctive sense of place and authentic residential character that reflects 140 years of settlement in Queenstown and embodies examples of domestic architecture from the early decades since the late 19th century to the present. Few, if any other areas in the town have retained this historic settlement pattern and character while successfully sustaining the addition of new development. Future maintenance of this special character can only be achieved by a considered and appropriate approach that firstly acknowledges the special character of the Park Street area and secondly identifies those elements of character that are significant. The proposed Park Street special character area definition is, in my view, an effective and suitable approach for delivering this objective. The establishment of this specific special character area definition will highlight the need for and facilitate the assessment of future development proposals against clearly defined values and characteristics, thus enabling clear and reasonable consideration to be given to the significance of the area whilst balancing the needs of future growth. Similarly, the revised Park Street special character area objective, associated policies and rule provisions proposed for Chapter 8 medium density residential of the PP are, in my view, an appropriate and methodical way of delivering the broad suite of provisions necessary to give due regard to the maintenance of the special character of the area. In particular, the amended rules regarding standards for boundary setbacks and lap rates for development design, such as site density, building length, recession terrain, boundary setbacks and landscaping, will assist to maintain the intrinsic heterogeneous residential character elements of the special character area, which are a central constituent of its broader cultural and streetscape significance. By respecting and encouraging awareness of the distinctive variety and combination of urban design elements within the special character area, through applying the proposed amended provisions for medium density residential, I believe it will assist to achieve the objective of positively maintaining and developing this Park Street special character area for the future amenity and benefit of Queenstown. Thank you very much.
commissioners, would you like to do questions now or keep going?
I
don't
think
we're
here. That's the question.
Okay, I'll just hand up the case summary.
Yes, thank you. Good morning. As Rosie says, we've had several goes at this and three generations of submissions, so if this gets through PESCO, the cost of our case, please let me know.
Well, it's only really good to know that.
Thank you. Numbers, and I would like to stress this, are opposed to growth or progress. Indeed, we would not be here without it. We have one or two of our members who are long-time Queenstown residents, but the great majority of the people have arrived recently because of such things as jets and internet and so forth. So this is not an atavistic Luddite resistance by any means. However, we are concerned that if growth or progress be planned so as not to irretrievably lose essential elements of the character of this area, which attract people, including visitors, to live or recreate here, which constitute its unique nature. I do stress later on that there is economic value deriving from the attraction of the special character here to visitors, and that's really quite important. This is not simply a movie argument. I respectfully suggest that the district is presently at a significant crossroads, and there's an opportunity in this present process for enlightened planning, the results of which will be appreciated by future generations. Ours is not a classic NIMBY argument of the kind that residents accept the face against sort of change. It is a considered and I hope respectful submission that perhaps in contradistinction to the past, the district planning now be done on a whole district basis. That is something which might be stressed too, because this process does provide perhaps the first opportunity I know of a holistic view for the district. And relatively, and at the micro level, one which is informed by sensible contemplation of the character of this area and of the question whether the objectives of the PDP truly require a zone change to become proposed at all or at the cost of the loss of community asset. This obviously speaks to classic balance under the Act in all respects, really. If it has a cost and it must be balanced, we say there's a special character there, and there are opportunities to meet objectives for people elsewhere, so it's why it lose one or the same. Yeah. Recently, but I would like to stress also that this, I don't wish to sound a little patronising or anything about this. There's certainly an element of self-interest about this. We live there, but there is a high level of isolation. Genuinely of altruism here, because the people who live there understand the value of the place, and there is an opportunity here, hopefully, to consider whether or not the thing that truly requires a lot of that special character. Recently, I've been frequently told by international visitors that the town and district are very much on the world stage because of the problems and pressures caused by its popularity, and to some extent a lack of past vision or planning execution. It's been suggested to me that one of the things that might occur is that if we as a community can derive smart and unique planning solutions to the problems that we've got, which are problems elsewhere in the world, then those solutions will become an attraction in itself. In other words, people will come to Queensland to see how we have dealt with these problems. The popularity is a blessing in some respects, but it needs to be managed as the residents of Barcelona and Venice, amongst others, now. The relevant area has a special character, which is described by Dr. Farman in the report, which you've heard and which I recommend. This character should be protected to benefit the community as well as the residents. There's been very much increased economic benefit as the character of the area, given its location and defining elements as an increasingly important part of the attraction of Queenstown. The present town centre and master plan, TCMP, has highlighted this, and I've attached the master plan consultation document, which went to the community a couple of months ago, which gives some indication of what is presently being discussed and promoted by the council. There is no need to increase the density of this area. I respect the submission, but there is sufficient potential and provision of the present zoning of the area to provide for an increase in housing. We do not seek to change that. I resist the temptation to note that it's presently got high density and there's possible proposed medium density and medium density. And one of those wonderful twists of numbers that shows actually high density than medium, but then high. There's no need to increase the to a significant extent, this potential has not been exploited because of the history of land banking or speculation in the area, often led by zoning changes, which increase the value of the land would result in no further development. We are concerned, given that history, that that cycle might continue. And the objective of the PDP, namely the provision of further housing near the CBD, will not be met, and there will be a loss of character of the area to no advantage. Since this process began, there have been a number of developments, which mean that there are or will be other areas which would be susceptible to an increase in density of the kind proposed by the TDP. These have been alluded to earlier, but clearly they include the old high school site and those areas affected by climate change 50 and other areas. The character of the area is not solely derived from the existence within it of classic heritage buildings such as ours or the stables. Rosie has made this point eminently well in her submission that the council's dependence on the lack of one particular character of heritage is rather missing the point. It's the homogeneity, well, she said. These do exist and provide an element of the character which is important, but so do other buildings and elements which are present and are described by Dr. Farn. In addition, the unique nature of the area, the proximity to the gardens and the town centre and the lake are very significant contributors to the character. It is in this regard that I again make reference to the history of the restoration of the Boatshed and Slipways project at Frampton Marina, with which I was involved, with others. I respectfully suggest that that project is a useful example of precedent of how something of value has been saved for the benefit of the whole community and not just those who sought to save it. It is perhaps sufficiently useful to note that at the time that the project was conceived, the council had determined to demolish the buildings, and this reflected a general, if understandable, lack of appreciation of what had been allowed to slip into a prosaic and somewhat wasteful disservitude. The issue here is that you don't notice these things at the time because they've been allowed to decline, and it's only after you restore them you realise what you might have missed. The poetry has become a very successful and popular attraction and something that we must see now in Queenstown. I should also say that the proposed area, a special character area, the Boatshed is a kind of name for stories of history of the district. It's not just a building, it's provoked a whole interest and engagement in the history of the maritime history of the area. And our argument would be that this area is to some extent, the special character area is to some extent a memory for the district as to residential development and development generally, and that should be maintained if possible. The TCMP, though still in process, has a number of elements which make very important planning of the area, planning of the surrounding area of influence, as it's called in the TCMP, that includes our area. The use of the area is cycleways and such is one issue, clearly also car parking is another. If car parks are to be removed from the CBD, as they are, a very important element is the role in which the special character area would play in town centre planning. The gardens in the area generally are to be much used to encourage visitors, including locals, back to the town. this is an important driver for the town centre master plan. The cry which we have heard increasingly in the last 2 years, and which has provoked council to the TCMP process, is that I never go to Queenstown anymore. And this has got sufficiently chronic that even those who were indifferent to it, like retailers downtown, now taking the view that something has to be done about this, because it's now deteriorating quite quickly. The new playground, this is an important driver of the TCMP. The new playground will begin this refreshing of the attractions of the old town. The council is spending some $680,000 on a new playground where Horn Creek meets the lake, and that is driven by the theme that something should be done to restore the character for the community of that part of the town of the Gallons, and there's for that reason that level of expenditure is underway in the next few months. I'm aware that the QLDC Events Department and many cultural and other organisations in the community will use the gardens and area, whether for events, walking, cycling or other activities. In short, the council is looking to give locals and visitors reasons to come to town. The proposed zoning is unlikely to produce such reasons. I consider that the special character area regime would do so and build upon the tradition I've observed and many others have observed of visitors walking, contemplating, recreating, generally enjoying the humanity, including the relative serenity or refuge of the area. This is particularly true of overseas visitors who often remark that their part of the world no longer is like this and they can't afford to enjoy that. As noted in my evidence in chief, the rural area presently suffers from a chronic shortage of car parks. This is certainly a problem for the residents, but it is also for the town and the district, and this is unlikely to improve the proposed high density, and certainly not where the TCMP proposes to remove the car parks from the CBD, and when QLDC removes some car parks from the gardens. Whilst it's to be hoped that the future will bring changes in transportation, such as remove reliance on conventional vehicles, and it's happening pretty quickly, almost all of a sudden, but at least in the short to medium term, I consider that the special character area regime will not only not exacerbate the problem and should alleviate it. Although in an early stage, there's now underway a program supported by council to consider the establishment of a cultural district centred on the CBD and the gardens, and so on, affecting and including the urban area. The essential driver of the cultural district idea is economic. That's important to stress. It is not something which is a nice to have anymore. It is considered. It is something which affects the economic prosperity of the community, which benefit from it. To identify, enhance, and employ the cultural assets of a place to attract visitors to it. These visitors, it is now well understood, wish to visit and engage with a living community and its stories. And by way of giving a good example of what cultural means, it is not opera or any particularly high flown pursuit. It is probably nicely exemplified by Luna, the light show we've had for the last 2 years in the gardens, which has been a great success in engaging the community and being a new economic driver for the community and particularly the town and gardens area. In my experience, including that gained by Tens earlier this year at a conference of the Global Cultural Districts Network in Barcelona, any such Queenstown cultural district would be much improved by the establishment of a special character area of the kind which we respectfully submit would be otherwise appropriate. Amongst other benefits, it would encourage the further emergence of a true and resilient community in this area. I think I've already made the point that elsewhere, that what really is striking about the cultural district idea is that it operates on the basis that visitors want to find a living community. They don't want to find just other tourists. And the cultural district allows that community to prosper and therefore to benefit from the additional economic prosperity that tourism brings. In this respect, I should note that the special character of the area is also derived from what might be called a cultural component. That is to say, its character is not simply derived from physical features such as buildings or streetscapes, but by dint of its location and activities which occur in it, it might be said to derive some important part of its character from what it does for the community as well as for its residents, as much of what it looks like. Perhaps this will be illustrated again when the 150th anniversary celebration began, just begun to go. And I'll be next to the town centre master plan. Thank you.
First of all, from Mr. Hill, and probably what I want to do is to question and test how well these provisions will work to achieve what it is that you think that we're supposed to achieve. I'm going to give you some stress test questions.
Right.
But just to start with, and so we are agreed, your submissions say that special character is a matter of section 7, and therefore it's a maintain and enhance regime, would be my proposition for you.
That would be the starting point in the Act, but there's nothing to say that a different or higher standard could be applied through the PDP. Indeed, I think that is what we've seen has been done with respect to some of the landscape provisions, where protects from inappropriate development, that's the starting point in section 6C for landscape. But in some instances, we say that has changed to more of an absolute requirement to protect. And so I think that is a viable outcome. So yes, I think that maintains and enhances the section 7 starting point. But if the evidence suggests that a higher level of protection is appropriate, then that is within the jurisdiction of the PDP to provide that.
Yes, and that goes to the objective, or the one objective, because I think if it's going to, if what you're hoping to achieve has both of those possibilities in it, then you need two objectives, not one. But anyway, that's just an observation.
Okay, yes.
Because,
So you mean both objectives, one being maintained?
No, maintaining and enhance would be the theme of one, and the protection element would be the theme of another, and that gets to my two stress tests.
Right.
One of them is how well these provisions would survive in the circumstances where amalgamation of sites is proposed, because with the media density residential, amalgamation of sites will lead to a different kind of development from the outcome that is currently described in the character statement.
Mm.
The second one is what about the demolition of buildings? The maintenance, if you were seeking to maintain a variety of building ages and materials, how can that be achieved without some kind of control over demolition? And the third one I'd like to pay attention to is what happens around the edges, and in particular in Hobart Street, because there will be opposite potentially high density, but certainly medium density, and a hotel that owns the entire block. So you'll end up, I can see with the other edges that things will not change a lot. But I'd like to run through those three particular tests. So first of all, what happens with the amalgamation of sites? How would these provisions serve to achieve the outcome that would maintain and enhance special character as described in the definition? And I'm not worried about using the definition, I'm just assuming that those words would go somewhere in the plan if your submission was successful. Could be called even. But that goal statement that's enshrined in that definition.
Could you point to me where in the NDRC the amalgamation of sites is anticipated?
But it can happen, it just happens.
Just
well, somebody buys three or four sites, joins them all up.
Yeah.
Does a multi-unit development, complies with the standards for that, and the form that comes out of that is quite different, and it is not floating, it is not single or two-storey housing with lots of green around it anymore. How is that avoided by these provisions in order to maintain and enhance what special character?
That is a good question. I hope that that would be protected against. The amalgamation of sites is of concern to the special character area.
It's a threat.
Yeah.
It's a definite threat to what.
So,
even with the current zoning.
Good.
Yeah. Anyone can answer?
Well, it's a brilliant question. It's completely germane.
Yeah.
We've got someone in the court for hearing today. represent somebody who has done just that, amalgamated sites in the area, and no doubt has views as to what is the way of life the president's owning, which is something we say we don't wish to disturb. I don't know the exact answer to this, except to say this, that it would be consistent with our view that there is a value in special character, that whatever can be done to influence the planning of whatever goes on those sites is done to keep that character to the best extent possible. That is to say, that there probably will, as there are other, in other parts of the world, buildings which are obviously far more modern, or maybe of certain design, or even to the high prison we're about under the prison zoning. But if they echo or reflect, or somehow don't diminish the sense of character, then progress would have been allowed, and not everything would have been thrown out. You know what I mean? So it's a difficult balance. I find this exactly the conundrum, as is the demolition question.
Well, that's the next part of the next thing. Are you going to comment, Mr. Chair?
I'm just going to assist this bill by saying that essentially under the subdivision rules, amalgamation at most is a boundary adjustment, which would be controlled.
Right, perhaps that might work for the subdivision section, because we only amend the rights to subdivision chapter 50 and retain the ODP standard of 450, which I think now further reflection won't achieve that
protection. Yes, because it works on subdivision, but not on amalgamation. And in fact, I suspect from experience that amalgamation doesn't require any consent from the council if you're not moving the boundaries.
Yes, okay, right. So that's something to think about to add in there. But I also think that perhaps the addition to the standards of slightly exceed within associated non-compliance status, building coverage and minimum landscaping requirements would assist to achieve better build form outcomes to an extent, as well as the additional matters of discretion which seeks to, in the special character area, achieve consistency with or the ability to complement special character areas so defined. So those are kind of a bit soft outcomes I appreciate and might not go all the way to keeping against amalgamation or boundary adjustment outcomes. So combined, perhaps I'll have a look at again at that provision.
Can I just clarify what you were saying about the provisions that are there? It seems to me that amalgamation is a problem in itself. The problem is you would need to maintain a scale of buildings and separation of buildings.
Yes.
And even within an amalgamation site and things like that. So are you saying those provisions achieve, existing provisions would achieve that anyway, even on a bigger site? A terrace or something.
It's the highly
five, six, seven hundred square metres worth of building, two stories. It's a completely different look and feel. But do the provisions preclude that, or would they need tweaking to do that?
I think, on further consideration, that goes a long way to precluding that, namely the requirement for sufficient boundary setback. Minimum landscaping requirements and maximum building coverage, and also more restrictive recession planes, so a 25 degree recession plane, would achieve the limitation of some of that built form outcome, but I need to, I think, turn my mind again to what different outcomes might be achieved through the application of our three assessments.
A simple way of doing it might be just require one house to set up with a minimum lot size of 450 square metres, so that you don't get those periods. That might be a way around it.
So at the moment we've got the maximum site density is one residential unit per 250.
Yes.
And so you do think that that would reflect the subdivision standard of 450
MP. I'm saying you need to say only one house per lot, and the lot size has to be bigger than 250, doesn't it? If you're going to, because I don't think you've got any 250 square metre lots in these two blocks at the moment. I can't tell for sure, but I'm just looking at the air photo, and they all look fairly conventional size. Yeah. You talked about them being a mix of sizes and things. I'll leave it with you to look at that. I'm just highlighting the risk. The second risk was, to me, demolition of buildings which at the moment are part of the mix, and the mix is part of the demonstration of evolutionary development.
Yeah.
The telling of the story. How is that, how can you manage that?
Well, we talked to manage that such that the standard with medical expression about new developments having to complement or be consistent with existing social character, and I think that any ability to restrict demolition might be quite difficult for any even if it's not a heritage item though.
Oh yes, it's done. It's just, I'm not sure whether your submission lets you go there, but it's just, for me, it's an issue in terms of achieving the maintain and enhance, because part of the maintain requires you to have buildings from every era, or at least a rolling wall of change, so to speak, so that you see history as goes forward, and so the provisions may help judge a new one, but they do nothing to help keep that variety.
Okay, so perhaps we could look at a similar provision within the heritage chapter, which sets the standards for definition of character building, and perhaps character building could then be included within the definition as well.
Yeah, and that might be why you'd look at other objectives. Because your objectives would have different purposes. Some would be to protect and retain and keep, but others would be to manage change, if you know what I mean.
Yes, yes, I completely appreciate that. I think I would think that we're going to look at this approach.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I'm just enjoying the discussion about this. Sorry, Mr. Chair, one last thing. What happens in Hobart Street with and how is special character maintained for the properties on the western side when the other side is the top form hotel and we have been told in evidence elsewhere that they own an entire block, and it is a tired building, so inevitably it will get changed. Or well, it's something like 80% hotel occupancy in Queenstown in 2016, which is quite phenomenal. So help me with how the special character is maintained under those circumstances.
When we were looking at the idea of the closure of the area and the boundaries, obviously the west side of Hobart Street comes within our area, but we acknowledged sort of fairly early on that the east side is very much, if modern is developed, that's it. I know it has potentially material effects on the character of the area enclosed on the west side of Hobart Street. One of the realities, you can't do anything about the east side. That would practical and unreasonable, but I think it's a case of, again, taking kind of a longer view and idea of what character is as well. And this actually goes back to your previous comment or question, Commissioner, is that the character area and whether you're trying to protect it, enhance it, help it manage development into the future. Time changes and things change, so you know, in some ways, though, it's not about keeping things static, it's actually about acknowledging the fact that whatever design goes into that area, whether it's on the east or west side, Pedlock Street within Park Street, if we can encourage good quality urban design that is consistent with the wheels, not necessarily directly influenced by and by that, it doesn't have to match the material. But it's keeping it in size and form, in keeping some of the basic streetscape and urban quality, and the quality and scale of that area, then that is actually a good outcome. And you are enhancing, it's new, it's, you know, it's, and the next building will be new. And eventually, every area, people will take, and I say this coming from a UK background, we have a longer idea of heritage, and a longer wealth of heritage. But in the end, everything does change, and it does renew itself. But that's a very long-term, it can be a very long-term process, and that's what we're very much, I think, trying to seek as well for this particular area. Elsewhere in Queenstown, that often long process has been quite opposite. It's been, as you said, some that are unbelievably short. So areas have just gone, central areas have been redeveloped beyond recognition, in some cases, from their original street plan, etc. The nature has changed, our occupancy has changed, and in some ways that has spread out from the very centre of the commercial heart of Queenstown to Charlotte Street. So the pocket we have, the breathing space we have with Park Street area, it's not to preserve it in this bit at all, it's actually to manage very good quality design and development into the future. Some buildings, the listed buildings are protected, obviously, they're protected under the HSFC Act 2016, so they from demolition, possibly from demolition, but they have to be considered. But I think we do, it would be appropriate to have the same restrictions on the other buildings in the Park Street area, because again, I think that would actually be unreasonable and not necessarily productive. But it's having good quality guidelines in the PDP. Wherever is appropriate, and I believe that's a very good experience for the team. But it's just recognising that to go forward, if the creep of the mass development and high density development comes out into that area will be lost. And it will only take two or three, if that large building, large development, so then it's gone. You know, and you can't replace that, and it will not happen in Queenstown.
This is a bit more fine grained, but on further consideration, Objective 822, which states that development contributes to the planned medium density character of the area through quality urban design solutions which talk to the response to site, neighbourhood, and wider context, could be of real assistance to help achieve that interface outcome if the special character area is recognised within the plan as well, because recognising the special character area as an overlay with its own objective or objectives will then inform how that objective and associated policy suite play out on adjacent sites, because then those will need to respond to the neighbourhood and wider context. That neighbourhood and wider context would be informed by the existence of the special character area. So that might, at a practical level, help to achieve the outcomes that Dr. Barman just talked about.
Yes, but I'm used to the way in which plans are administered, and the slippage is considerable between cup and lip. So you want the words in the plan. Respond sensitively doesn't cut it with me. Write what you want. But anyway, I think, Mr. Chair, I've taken enough time. That was a useful exploration of what is possible, and I'll stick with it now.
I just wanted something rather different from Mr. Cassidy. It's quite a long town centre consultation document. I wanted you to draw my attention to the relevant parts.
Yes, I'm sorry. It is a bit impressionistic altogether. It's an ongoing process.
It is.
It hasn't yet emerged in its full character. What I want to do is two things. One is just show that the process is underway.
Yeah.
And maybe I struggle sometimes trying to see how all the various planning processes go down.
That's where exactly where I'm going. Yeah.
Okay. I might have a go at it, but I can't. And all I'd say is this, that being involved in it made me realise that one thing bumps up against another. And that's what's starting to emerge from the town centre master plan, is that changing the character of the town is going to change the character of the surrounding areas, including the one which we're discussing today. The second thing I want to say was something more specific, or again, it hasn't quite emerged, but clearly what is proposed is that the Franklin Track and the gardens and the area that we're talking about will start to come into play much more through changes in transport like cycling or walking, and changes in recreation like the creative use of the gardens, and then the more prosaic considerations like if you do pedestrianise downtown Queenstown, which is clearly a major thing, you're going to have to find somewhere, at least in the short term, for car parking and traffic to be accommodated. On one view, that will affect that area specifically because there might be more car parks out there. And if that would be the case, then we, I personally contend against that, but if it were to be the case, then suddenly if you have an increase in density, you would have more traffic in the area.
Is your area particularly used for commuter parking?
Yes, it really is quite extraordinary.
So there wouldn't be much opportunity for either spill into it anyway, obviously.
No, in fact, there's almost a local culture of, you know, car park management and people in particular will start again. There's no opportunity for spill. It's every year it gets more and more, depending on the season, more and more congested.
So anybody that's displaced from the town centre is going to have to find somewhere else anyway.
Yes, they are. It is a mutual bit chronic, I think that's correct. It's really quite something.
So
it's been put off year after year.
So as a process, this town centre conversation is a guy who wins it. You know, what are the milestones?
Well, the professed milestones are to have some kind of result in the next couple of months, because it relates to a funding application by council for infrastructure to the central government. And the town centre master plan is a process to essentially generate a business case and a claim for funding. On one view, it may finish that process sufficient to, you know, get the invoice into Wellington, but I can't personally see how it cannot be a more continuing discussion. A, because the community's got quite a lot to say about it, and should, and B, because it bumps into other things, including, most importantly, this process. And then I
was trying to explore this process, because we have the ability to preempt part of that process, possibly.
Yes, well, and there are others, of course, that go on as well. So that's why, at the beginning of my summary, I made a point about how welcome it would be to have an overall holistic district plan or spatial plan or something done. And I was about to try and take a photograph of a very fast moving train, one that's just got faster in the last few years. But nevertheless, I find it difficult to imagine how you could properly plan without knowing the full temporal and spatial context in which you're living.
Welcome to our world.
Thank you. I think it's.
I mean, that's what you meant to Queenstown.
Yeah. Well, again, this is one of the things about the discussion. I mean, since we put our submission in, I became aware of this cultural district notion. And have an opportunity to see something of it, and that's another context in which I think that the special character is interesting. And in that context, I've learned there are so many other places in the world that have exactly the same problem. But sooner or later they have to grasp the nettle, but otherwise, you know, the water's up to their waist and they start to lose the very asset which attracts people to them.
Thank you. I don't have any other questions. There is a minor point in your proposed provisions in this hill and the setbacks. It seems to have a confusion as to setbacks from road boundaries and then requiring different setbacks for front sites from road sites for road boundaries. That's a minor matter.
Yes.
I was just wondering if, given the earlier discussion, you had any inclination to revise those.
Yes, I was just about to receive the leave of the Commission to perhaps come back here before the close of this hearing stream with some tweaks according to the Commission's call for questions in particular. So would that be this? Yeah, tomorrow.
No.
Or is it?
Moon next week.
Moon next. Oh, that's not that point. Yes, if it's a submission, I will lodge a slightly tweaked version of the tender contract. And I know I briefly alluded to the approach that I've taken to set out a character submission. And does the Commission have any sense of how that might fit, or if there were preference to perhaps pursue that and see within Chapter 8, or if there's at no preference, then I'll keep it the way it is at the moment.
I would have thought it's not appropriate as a definition, to be honest. It's not a definition.
Yeah.
That's a description.
It is a character statement, yeah. Mm. Yeah. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. Than that, it's probably a bit more
microphone. Okay, good. Well, that concludes the submitted case this morning. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Key reasons why a structure plan has been implemented within the zone, being a more detailed or comprehensive planning tool in contrast to other residential areas is to recognise the central relationship. As noted above, I provided a review of the proposed access point provisions in Hearing Stream 9. As part of this review, I recommended several amendments to the provisions to better recognise the importance of views from within the zone for residents. Therefore, I consider careful analysis of the proposed development and its impact on the outlook of existing residents is both a valid consideration and important one when analysing the appropriateness of the proposed expansion beyond the existing development areas within Homestead Bay. And just on that, I just thought it's worth noting the checkpoint resort zone and the operative plan was a second generation to the provisions to enable the development of that zone. And I think as part of a second generation review of that zone, we're now in a phase where we have quite an established residential area, and then therefore revisiting that zone, you need to think about not only how that development will evolve from that starting point, but also in terms of the residents that are now there. And so I think that's an important component of reviewing that zone and how it recognises the residents that now live there. So then turning to 2.3, I remain of the view that in addition to the amendments I recommended in Hearing Stream 9, the following additions to the provisions are required to ensure mounting addresses potential visibility from the adjacent neighbourhoods. And so those additions there were also provided in my statement to the Supreme Court, so just reiterated those amendments. And that just builds on that point that you mentioned about needing to look and not just simply use the highway, but the fact that we need to now recognise we've got an established residential area and residents living here. 2.4. In terms of the mounts promoted by the submitter, it remains unclear to me to what extent they will screen development from the existing residential area at Jack's Point. Even if the focus of the mounting and analysis has been on potential visibility from the state highway rather than existing residential areas. In my opinion, if mounting and planting is to be utilised to screen development, at a minimum, a consent process is required to assess at a more detailed level the exact form, height, shape, etc. of the mounds, proposed planting, irrigation, and other mechanisms to maintain and protect the screening in perpetuity. The policy framework proposed by the submitter does not achieve this, and therefore, in my view, is inadequate and unlikely to deliver the outcomes promoted. And this I'm just touching on, I understand there's been some discussion around to what extent there needs to be a subsequent consenting process for the mounds promoted by the submitter. And I think given planting and those mounds are so integral to the concept of screening, that level of detail in the subsequent consenting process is necessary. Having lived to Jack's Point also, I know that getting planting to establish is somewhat tricky. You need to irrigate it, you need to look after it, and after it takes a couple of years before you can really establish it. And the Residents Association itself has experienced that and having to sort of replant quite a few areas because planting can die the first time round. So it's really important those mechanisms provide that ongoing framework, otherwise you really do have no certainty that the screening that's suggested can be afforded would actually be out there. Trails. I remain of the view a network of trails should connect the proposed Homestead Bay pods to each other and existing Jack's Point neighbourhoods, and these trails should be identified on the structure plan. A corresponding rule should be provided that requires the formation of the trails in a logical manner in step with the development of Homestead Bay. I remain of the view, given the importance of adequate access to any development, it makes good planning sense to ensure roading access and any land ownership and maintenance issues surrounding access are resolved before the panel can have confidence access can be provided to the zone without significant upfront or ongoing cost to the existing community. In my view, it is unclear to what extent the existing Mary Jack Road intersection will require upgrading, including matters such as lighting of the intersection. For example, at present, the intersection is not lit, which in my view aligns with the character and night sky objectives of Jack's Point. And I have picked up that the suggestion now is potentially that beyond a certain level of development, you would have to install a second access point, further to the south or towards Kingston. But just on that point, I note that the Marriage Act Road intersection is clearly going to be the most convenient entry point for those residents in Hunter Bay. It's much closer from the predominant way they'll be travelling to and from their government than Queenstown. So again, I think to just simply suggest that beyond a certain point, you introduce another intersection is probably oversimplifying the actual relationship between how people will drive into the subdivision. And therefore, I do believe that considerations on marriage and growth for the whole development are still relevant. And then finally, with respect to the end zone airstrip, in my opinion, any expansion of this operation beyond the gap provided for in the existing consent is inappropriate as confirmed by the Environment Court. Therefore, careful consideration of how this activity is provided for is necessary. In my view, the existing rural framework has proven robust and appropriate to assess and consider potential implications of expansion. In particular, the consideration of existing residents' amenity, outlook, privacy and rural amenity were all key components of our end-zoned application to expand the operation which required by the Environment Court. As discussed above, in my view, the provisions as proposed for the Jacks Point Resort Zone require changes to better consider amenity of residents. Further, as currently drafted, in my view, the provisions do not contemplate an airstrip of the nature provided by end zone. Therefore, simply adding it into the zone would inadequately address potential adverse effects of the nature considered when end zone sought to expand their operation under the rural provisions. Yes, I just on the end zone side of them, I have referenced Bradburn's submission, and I agree with his position with respect to the noise. I understand Mr. Childs has provided some assessment of noise, but that's incorrectly considered the wrong noise levels as per the new proposed noise levels under the noise chapter. And beyond that, I understood there was potential for some noise, further noise assessments to be provided, but it hasn't.
Okay, as long as you know that we're all on the same page.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Three things I want to explore. The perception of existing residents of Jack's Point that they would continue to enjoy rural views across that area, you're saying that is derived. And it relies on the structure plan. It's derived from the structure plan, from the form of development that you see on that structure plan.
Yes, that's right. So the concept of the structure plan is positive development with quite significant areas of open space between them.
Is that reflected at a higher level in the provisions and the objective and policies?
Of the zone or
yes,
the strategic?
Of the zone.
It should. Whether or not it does, I wouldn't be able to change the structure. As I suggested in my evidence in respect of Stream 9, I found it important that the provisions recognise the importance of that structure plan in setting up the framework for design and the fact that we are dealing with something.
Well, that's something that was. We can't rely on that solution because that's something that would occur simultaneously, not in advance. We can't rely on your evidence for Stream 8 because that hasn't been decided either.
To Stream 9?
Stream 9. It's actually yet to be decided. And
in other words, it's like that at the same time.
Yes.
So I'm looking for something that exists. I've already had to look at that myself.
Yeah, apologies, I didn't attach my Stream 9 review of the provisions. I think Mr. Bradford may have done in his submission. We worked on that set of provisions together, so I think he may have submitted that.
I think my point probably is that the structure plan, as it exists, reflects the objective and policy of the zone as they exist.
Mm-hmm.
And possibly, yeah, but... Okay, the roading, but... When you talk about upgrading a Barbiejack Road, and I understand your point about it possibly being a preferable route.
Yes.
But what do you really say about that upgrading? Is it just that it would need to happen, or that you don't want it to happen?
Well, Well, I think there's a lot of uncertainty around how that can happen at all, given the complexity of the ownership around it. And to better understand whether or not it's even feasible prior to, and understand what that may mean.
But if, I mean, if the Jets Point, for example, residents, owners association is in a position to block that operation, they would just simply have to wear the consequences of that. They're not able to block the traffic, they might be able to block the upgrading.
I guess, yeah, that would be somewhat unusual to be in a situation with the traffic. Yeah, I don't think you'd end up in a situation where the development would have occurred without the upgrading. The two would have to have been dealt with.
Well, I'm just foreseeing that, you know, if Jack's Point and Homestead Bay really come to a standoff and cooperation ceases, would Homestead Bay still be able to do their development and just allow their new residents to use Murray Jack Roads with or without upgrading?
I don't believe so. I mean, it's a stakeholder agreement that sits behind the plan that requires certain objectives and the different values to achieve it. But also, the subdivision process, I'm sure, would effectively require, presumably, the upgrade of Murray Jack Roads.
So, cut to the chase. It's what you're so keen saying, is that you don't want the Homestead Bay expanded because you don't want the upgrading of the road.
Well, I'm not saying that, I'm not clear to what extent the Homestead Bay requires upgrading. If it can be done or doesn't need any physical changes to the cap, I mean, Murray Jack Road is critical to the character of Jack's Point as a whole. And it's unclear to me to what extent upgrading is required, whether or not that can be done sensitively. In keeping with the Jews of Jack's Point or not. It was quite a challenge at the time of the council when the initial writing was being considered, and that's why effectively the Residents Association was at the time an alternative treatment for the road was sought, and that wouldn't meet council standards. So the developer went to the extent of private, having kept those roads private. So I would be concerned that the engineering standards may require quite significant changes to that character of the road.
So what you're saying, that you need to see the details of that before you...
Whether
the whole Homestead Bay expansion is acceptable.
Beyond the point where it is, yeah, I think so, yeah.
I mean, just turning to the info, just to clarify what you said there. I mean, I sort of... aware the Environment Court turned down the expansion. Is your fear that in some way the inclusion of, to the extent that it is actually included in the provisions, would reopen the possibility for them expanding their operations?
Yeah, well, there'd be nothing, from my understanding, if it's inserted into the design, it wouldn't be prohibited. There'd be no prohibited activities status for any expansion, so yes, it would be quite conceivable. We would seek consent to expand.
And it's conceivable that they were not successful this time around.
Well, in my opinion, the way the current provisions of the resort zone are structured, yes, it would be much more amenable to an expansion of the zone, largely by the fact that it's simply not referred to in any of the existing policies in any way. And therefore, in my experience, a lack of guidance typically supports an activity rather than hinders it.
So the way that that's been inserted is...
Well, it's an afterthought.
It's an afterthought. It's saying it's not properly developed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And in part of that is the fact that there's very little recognition of residential or resident amenity in the current provisions, which I've consistently and others have sought to have provided for, and that clearly would be a significant gap in any assessment of an expansion of the zone. So there'd be little ability to consider as a building community.
But what would happen, in your opinion, and I'm just thinking aloud here, if we simply left it out of them. Say we were,
you
know, say we were had found ourselves subdivided to the extent of a residential extension, but didn't do anything about the inside, lift it out completely and left the site zone rural and left them relying on their resources. Would that be a more satisfactory outcome?
My only caution with that is I do accept up in the council plan and they have raised a fee. You potentially end up with a somewhat isolated pocket of rural zoned land. And given the structure of how we assess rural activities in a rural zone is largely landscape based, it can become quite problematic.
No, I was only talking about the in zone site.
But that's what I'm saying is when someone comes to assess, say, an extension of the end zone within the rural framework, it becomes quite difficult when you have such a small pocket of land zone, rural general.
Yeah.
So I think it would need to be quite carefully considered.
So, in fact, if it's going to be there at all, you need a better set of provisions for that.
I think so. Yeah, I think just trying to ignore it is probably the least desirable situation.
Well, technically we would start our agreement now, but I think we'll carry on with you to start with.
That's right.
So, no. Technically we would start our agreement now, but I think we'll start with your submission as in the break before.
They're going to be very brief, so if you want to take a break, that's fine by me.
Okay. We'll take a short break. I'll adjourn until 11:45. Thank you.